It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this fourth day of March, 2022. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., or I mean 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't know where that 3 came from. And 2 to 5, 5 to 8 and 2 to 5 Pacific, and all time zones in between, and the great globe round. There. That was harder than it had to be. Hi, I'm Robin. But anyway, if you pop by and you go into the aforementioned chat room, well, you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers. Anatole, well, let me refresh here and make sure I'm not misspeaking. Yeah, Anatole and Kid Mark and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and moderated by yours truly, because Sparky is not around this afternoon. He has another engagement, and so consequently, I'm the moderator. So you guys behave, because I'm not going to be able to hang out there and everybody usually behaves. We don't often have any adventurous, fringy, right-wing maggot types popping by. It is, like I said, the fourth day of March, 2022. The appointment that I had scheduled yesterday got rescheduled to tomorrow. And, that means I'll be heading over to Beckley and popping by the UPS store, post office box, and that sort of thing. So, hopefully it'll be I'm kind of excited because if the weather forecast holds out the way it's supposed to, we should get up to sunny and, oh my God, 76 degrees tomorrow. For Central Appalachia. Well, yeah, climate change is real, but and that'll be fleeting. You know, there's probably a blizzard coming, but I'm gonna find something that'll allow the sun to touch my pale pink skin. And hopefully I won't get, you know, burned. But at any rate, I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our fourth day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And consequently, that means thanks to Kim. Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to Thomas. And thanks, generally speaking, for being partial sponsors of independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting of the non-capitalist variety. Thank you for all the kind gifts that you send to keep this effort going. Thought the boy was coming back onto the into the studio. Oh well. Fundraising wise, to finish the week, we are at $480. That's today's fundraising goal plus $180 of yesterday. And it would be wonderful if we can get that knocked down with some, you know, alacrity, that is, by the end of the program or, you know, tomorrow morning or something. But at any rate, Joey gets us started with, "The world is going cray-cray." We saw the two children in Congress behave in a childish fashion on Tuesday night. You know, the dipshit twins. Dumber and dumberer. This was not a surprise, Joey notes. "I only wish that when children continually dredge up Benghazi or the 13 dead in the Afghanistan departure, the left would bring up David Johnson and the four that were killed in Niger on Trump's watch, or the fact that the Afghan war was started by a Republican president and the last Republican president campaigned on ending that war but didn't keep his word." Well, you know, he's a pathological liar, Joey, so what do you want? I only wish Joe Biden would have calmly pointed that out on Tuesday night. I can see where that would have been nice. Jeffrey with a script. Biden directing his thoughts toward Lauren Bobblehead Boebert could have simply said, "Who started that war in Afghanistan? A Republican president. Who campaigned on ending that war and didn't? The previous president. Who ended that war with me? This president. Me. Now, why don't you two children go to your room, because the State of the Union is an adult affair." Nicely done, Jeffrey. Nicely done. Well, speaking of children, in last Friday's Journal, I wrote that the Supreme Court was basically run by six men, and fortunately, Robin picked up on my intentional attempt to characterize Amy COVID Barrett as a child and just a puppet that her husband simply pulls the strings for the right wing, their Handmaid's Tale agenda. Injustice Barrett speaks and acts like a child of the Handmaid's Tales. She will, just like Injustice Thomas, never have a written opinion of any substance and will simply adhere to and abide by Samuel Alito. I like when Jeffrey says injustice for the illegitimate justices. It's kind of nice. On this day in 1952, Ernest Hemingway, who may very well have been trans AF, finished his novel, The Old Man and the Sea. Speaking of old men, and one specifically who should have been cast out to sea, on this day in 1987, Ronnie Reagan gave his non-apology admission that he and members of his cabinet were directly involved in the Iran-Contra affair. The war criminal Reagan said something to the effect of, "My heart tells me one thing, but my head tells me another. This asshole should have immediately gone to jail or been placed on house arrest." Oh, wait, there's Junior. "Gee, Joey, don't you mean White House arrest?" Oh, Lord, that child. Go to your room, Junior. Also on this day in 1989, Time Incorporated and Warner Communications Incorporated announced plans to merge into the world's largest media and entertainment conglomerate. This merger very much summed up the Reagan years as the Sherman Antitrust Act began to not be enforced and major corporations began to merge and corner the markets. Greed was considered good. Deregulation was in full force and companies merged and did whatever they wanted, not to mention the endless tax cuts for the rich and war on the poor. Jeffrey believes, "If Ronald Reagan had been held responsible for Iran-Contra, we may never have had the illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, started by an illegitimately appointed, propped-up, fucked-up president, W. And we likely would have never had a completely incompetent president such as the last one. This is all the result of not maintaining and not enforcing the rule of law. So let's go Merrick Garland, enforce the laws of the land, and go arrest Donald Trump. Tell Trump that this country is run by rules of law, not Mar-a-Lago." Okay, Jeffrey. And finally, a little something from Joey 2, the Kangaroo.
On this day in 1969, the Cray twins, Ronald and Reginald, are found guilty of the murder of Jack McVitie at the Old Bailey Inn. Both Ronald Cray and Reginald Cray are not sentenced to life in prison for the murder of a man, but rather were sentenced to the loony bin, because the judge thought, yes, the judge sentenced the Cray brothers to the Nut House, because he deemed that the two brothers were, yes, the judge deemed both brothers were cray-cray.
Little girl, you go to your room, too. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the Front Porch, March 4th, 2022, with Giraffery watching the world go cray-cray. And there's a $10 cray-cray challenge on the table. Thank you. Thank you, Joey. Yeah, you better get those kids under control, or you don't want to know what they're going to do with you when you get older, Joey. Just, oh dear. So, I know, Kid Mark, that got a bell. We're really stretching things these days. Everybody's a critic. So, it is Friday on the Front Porch, and the Sparky may or may not be around to start the call, so hopefully maybe Steve from Georgistan will be, or at the very worst, maybe Brother Deacon Asa. I don't know. We'll just see how that plays out eventually. I don't know where our buddy John in PA finds this stuff, but if you go over on my Twitter timeline, you'll see just this. It just directs it at me, and look at his patch, because this is, after all, Friday. It is a, I'd be surprised if it wasn't done in velvet, you know, the bullfighter style, or dogs playing poker style. But it's a painting of a West Virginia State Police trooper ostensibly rendering, I know, talking about visuals on the radio, dancing about architecture, sure. But ostensibly rendering CPR to a child that he holds in his arms. It was a 70s PR attempt that failed badly. And a little scroll in the corner of the painting says, "And some call him pig." Just the way the painting looks, the first thing that came to mind was me, was, "And some call him Uncle Daddy." Oh my God, it's so gross. And I only mention that because, well, these things apparently in the 70s popped up all over the country, and I guess this one hangs in a police station. Near Sadie Shore Parks' home. Dear God. But I mention it not to stand alone, but because of a story that I somehow or another managed to miss in all, I mean, well, I know why I missed it. Because I was really, really busy with war news. But this is just one of those that kind of finds its way into the into the zeitgeist. Because, oh my God, it's the story of, and I've gotten to the point where every time I see the words youth and pastor next to each other, I know the story is going to be really cringy. And so it is with youth pastor Joshua Wesley. Youth pastor Joshua Wesley celebrated his Instagram post. Well, with an Instagram post, Joshua Wesley a youth pastor, celebrated the birthday of his beloved. They'd been dating for 4 years. I mean, you hope it was a Christian way that they'd been dating for 4 years. Because the Instagram post celebrating her birthday was, in point of fact, celebrating her 18th birthday. I posted it back on Valentine's Day. It was a few years back because he went on and after, you know, arguably grooming a child from the time she was 14, and he went on to marry her. And it reminds me of somebody, and I think the guy's in Germany, but it reminds me of somebody here in America. Oh, yeah, Roy Tolamore. The woman he went on to marry, it was roughly the same age as the girl that he creepered on back when he was in his early 30s. And yeah, so he got some grief online. I don't think he got canceled. In that post back then, he said, "She's finally 18. You've been my best friend for 4 years. You're my girlfriend that I love, appreciate, respect, and admire more than anything." People began doing basic math, you know, 18 minus 4 is... Yeah, I know. This is just... Ugh. Sorry. Just didn't want that one to go by the boards. Exactly, the painting of the state trooper, Darlene, says something that didn't age well. I don't think it started out well, Darlene. It was just, yuck. So we've got at least a beginning to the program. As far as me stumbling over the start times of the program, Scott in San Diego says, "And for the Zen Buddhists out there, it's always on in the eternal now, any present moment you choose. P.S. Putin has no soul. In its place, there's a happy fun ball. We should have heeded the product warning disclaimer." Yeah.
It's happy. It's fun. It's happy fun ball.
Yes, it's happy fun ball, the toy sensation that's sweeping the nation. Only $14.95 at participating stores. Get one today.
Warning: pregnant women, the elderly, and children under 10 should avoid prolonged exposure to happy fun ball. Caution, Happy Fun Ball may suddenly accelerate to dangerous speeds. Happy Fun Ball contains a liquid core, which, if exposed due to rupture, should not be touched, inhaled, or looked at. Do not use Happy Fun Ball on concrete. Discontinue use of Happy Fun Ball if any of the following occurs: itching, vertigo, dizziness, tingling in extremities, loss of balance or coordination, slurred speech, temporary blindness, profuse sweating, or heart palpitations. If Happy Fun Ball begins to smoke, get away immediately. Seek shelter and cover head. Happy Fun Ball may stick to certain types of skin. When not in use, Happy Fun Ball should be returned to its special container and kept under refrigeration. Failure to do so relieves the makers of Happy Fun Ball, Wacky Products Incorporated, and its parent company, Global Chemical Unlimited, of any and all liability. Ingredients of Happy Fun Ball include an unknown glowing substance which fell to Earth, presumably from outer space. Happy Fun Ball has been shipped to our troops in Saudi Arabia and is also being dropped by our warplanes on Iraq. Do not taunt Happy Fun Ball. Happy Fun Ball comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Happy Fun Ball. Accept no substitutes.
Dear God, you may be right, Scott. You may in fact be right. I wanted to getting us started this evening, a note coming in from our dear friend Bernadette, she of Pre's Trees, which has been helping a lot these days with my neck. Sometimes it just the rotten discs in my neck just act up, and they really, really hurt, and there's like no way to get comfortable laying down or sitting up or walking around or standing, or there's just no way to be comfortable. And Pre's Trees is a tremendous blessing in that regard. Makes things the salve for what ails you, she calls it. And she says, done paying bills. I love the cray-cray challenge for a cray-cray world. And Bernadette met Joey and Giraffe and Juniors and Joey 2, the Kangaroos cray-cray challenge. So that means that we got 460 to go to finish the week. Thank you, Bernadette. Thank you so, so very much for doing that. It was right, like I said, I just wanted to start with something different. Because, I don't know about, well, I think you're probably where I am on this. And that is that the war against the innocent people of Ukraine is maybe taking a toll on my equanimity. And right after the program was over yesterday, I saw the news of the attack on the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. And apparently Putin's forces have taken it over, and that single nuclear power plant provides 25% of the electricity for the people of Ukraine. And they were bombing around it, having already stirred up a bunch of radioactive dust and sent the Geiger counters to clicking along at Chernobyl. And it, I don't know about you. Maybe we'll talk about this when we get around to the front porch portion of the program. But it, I'm getting, and maybe this is a matter of, and you know, on the left we talk about this, manufacturing consent. I have so many different emotions about what's going on there. And they are not of one accord. My distaste, my disgust with warfare is real and abiding, and it has not changed. In point of fact, responding to the attack on the nuclear power plant, and this from Agence France-Presse, the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine tweeted, "It is a war crime to attack a nuclear power plant." Speaking of the plant at Zaporizhia, and that led Agence France-Presse to inquire as to whether the United States government was openly accusing Moscow of engaging in a prohibited war crime. And the State Department, via a spokesman, said the intentional targeting of civilians or civilian objects, including nuclear power plants, is a war crime, and we are assessing the circumstances of this operation. But regardless of the legality, this action was the height of irresponsibility, and the Kremlin must cease operations around nuclear infrastructure. All of which is a true and fair statement. But it seems to... It seems to lack, or maybe this is just the public perception, a real firm understanding of the fact that big bad Vladdy Daddy doesn't give a fuck. Now, this is a guy with kids and grandkids, maybe great grandkids. I don't know. But whatever it is, he doesn't seem to care about the consequences. And if we talk about an attack on a nuclear power plant being a war crime, isn't this whole thing a great big war? From the first shot fired, from the first foot, the first tank track, the first wheel across the Ukrainian frontier, isn't it all a war crime? There is no, there was no casus belli. And for the sake of consistency and you know, my own ideological purity, I'll say the same thing about Iraq and what we did there. But once you, and I understand why they don't say it outright, because that makes whatever hope of getting Putin out of Ukraine something approaching a statistical impossibility. Because if you start hollering war crime now, where's the incentive for him to stop or to withdraw? Because it just means if he does, he's a war criminal. Or that he will face those charges. But then again, he must surely know, unless he is, unless he's further down the rabbit hole than, say, well, I don't know, Ronnie Reagan was in the years right before he stopped being a person, that is to say, died with his brain hollowed out by Alzheimer's. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And I balance all of that against the fact that it feels like somebody's got to stop him. President Zelensky of Ukraine is out there saying, "Okay, fine, you're not going to do a no-fly zone, then give us some damn planes." And we were talking about exactly that on the last program. What can he do if the planes have Ukraine? What can Putin do if the planes have Ukrainian markings? I am straight up flummoxed. And I wanted to suggest that as the weekend comes on, and knowing the nature of myself and the rest of this Horn Family Community congregation, I know we'll be I know we'll all be watching, probably glued to the news. And with that in mind, pay attention to the reporting of correspondents on the ground in Russia. Because things are apparently getting bad enough there that a law has been hastily created imposing 25-year sentences for anyone who spreads fake news about the invasion of Ukraine. That is to say, in Russia, anybody who actually talks about this vicious, unprovoked war against the innocent people of Ukraine. I don't think that applies solely to Russian citizens. And at least one news outlet thinks that way. The BBC said today that they're stopping their journalists from working in Russia in the wake of the new law that that attempts to muzzle dissent over the war. And it's, you can't really blame them. the Beeb has a really big Moscow bureau, and they also run a Russian language website. And BBC Director General Tim Davies said, "This legislation appears to criminalize the process of independent journalism, and journalists could face the risk of criminal prosecution simply for doing their jobs." And as such, the BBC felt like it had no other choice than to shutter the operation. And the law is, of course, written with extreme vagueness. If fake news leads to serious consequences, legislation threatens imprisonment of up to 15 years. And two independent Russian news operations, Novaya Gazeta and The Bell is a business news website, also announced today that they're going to stop reporting on the invasion of Ukraine so that Putin and his criminal henchmen can't come after them. And in another case of Russian tyrannical thugs sounding just like the Republican Party, Vyacheslav Volodin had a hissy today after Facebook became inaccessible in Mother Russia. Vyacheslav Volodin said, "All these IT companies, beginning with Instagram and ending with the others, are based in the United States of America. It is clear they are used as weapons. They carry hatred and lies. We need to oppose this." See what I mean? Except for my sketchy Russian dumb accent. That could be any grunting, barking, hooting Republican shrieking about being canceled by big tech. So it will be interesting to see what happens to the reporting coming out of particularly Moscow. The German broadcaster Deutsche Welle, as well as an independent news website called Medusa, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and its Russian language website, and Svoboda, have been limited. That, according to Roskomnadzor, after prosecutors asked for it. Curiously, the Kremlin has a human rights council. Of course, those don't apply to the LGBTQ community in Mother Russia. But Valery Fadeyev said there is huge flow of false information that comes from Ukraine. Human rights council has set up project to make it stop. And they're doing Russian cops are and have been today doing tosses of a human rights group in Russia called Memorial, and they were ordered to close last year anyway. So one wonders just I guess, reporting on them attacking a nuclear power plant. I guess that constitutes something that Russia wished the rest of the world couldn't know. And, of course, there's precious little reporting coming from the areas that they have already invaded and conquered. And I heard repeatedly today statements to, you know, listen, we talk about the trouble that they're having getting it done, but the fact is the Russians are winning. They are winning. And they are taking more territory. They will probably, by the end of the weekend, complete the closure of Ukrainian access to the Black Sea. And unless something happens of a rather dramatic nature, I don't know how Ukraine can be saved. And as Megan just pointed out, am I wrong? This is feeling a bit too much like the 1930s for my taste. Does anybody else feel it? Oh, yeah. It's been feeling like 1938 for a while. And the day that Putin invaded Ukraine felt a lot like September 1st, 1939. And that came that day, that bloody initiation into a vast global bloodletting. That came after the world had sat on its hands as the Empire of Japan rolled over China, the rape of Nanking. As the world sat on its hands for the annexation of the Sudetenland, the annexation of Austria, and then finally woke up with the invasion of Poland. And I'm beginning to wonder if we're going to have to, if we're going to sit around and wait for the invasion of Poland again. And the Polish people have got to be sitting there going, oh no, not again. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. They've all got to have a sort of feeling of deja vu. And it's creepy as hell. Steve in New York says, no, the whole thing is not a war crime. It's worse. I will elaborate on the porch. Okay. Until I opened that, I was, really? Not? Crime against humanity? Yeah, I think there's there's plenty for us to talk about this evening. And of course, I can see it's being discussed already in the chat. The words of Lady G, Lindsey Graham, said, "I don't know why somebody doesn't just go in there and take him out. Somebody in Russia just needs to go and kill him." I love it when Lady G gets all butch. And as Darlene in Connecticut lets me know, a Russian dissident has offered $1 million bounty on for Putin's arrest amid the invasion, saying, I just wanted to send a message. Alex Kanyakin says, I'm not naive. I recognize that someone will not bring him in. I'm not going to be mistaken for one of those Russians who was silently complicit. And there is, and this is the reason for the information suppression and crackdown, at great personal risk, there's no small number of Russians who also refuse to be complicit. Taking to the streets. Um, and taking flight. According to Axios, Russian citizens are desperately trying to leave the country in their thousands as they expect Vlad Putin to soon declare martial law, which means people will simply be shot in the streets. They're also expecting him to close the borders and take the velvet glove off of the iron fist and hammer the Russian people. And this is part of the, you know, we talk about the strength of the sanctions, and the sanctions are the strongest ever that I'm aware of. But I don't think they really touch Putin. Do they? He's got money squirreled away hither, thither, and yon. He's probably got entire rooms filled with gold and, you know, nice, crisp $100 bills. And with that in mind, he won't really feel it. And I don't think anybody is silly enough to think that he actually gives much of a damn about the Russian people, because Russian rulers have a habit and a history of not caring. So, younger Russians, CNN's Nick Robertson reported, younger Russians are pretty well aware that they're being lied to by their government, and they're doing whatever they can to try to get information from other sources. It must certainly be a nightmare to be living in Mother Russia at this point in time. Confirmation coming of something that's been reported for almost a week now, that the Russians are using cluster munitions. Smirch rockets, largely condemned in the world community because they are dropped to kill civilians. A former British Army officer said these are extremely nasty and can drop hundreds of submunitions. Bellingcat's Nick Waters says new video from Zatoka in Odessa. It shows an RBK-500 airdrop munition. Once again, war crimes. And once again, just because we've done mean, vicious shit doesn't mean that we have to sit idly by when someone else does too. Nick Waters said the local authorities in Zatoka also state they recovered an RBK-250, another airdropped cluster munition. The failure rate of these submunitions is high. Usually a large proportion of bomblets don't detonate, which frequently end up injuring or killing curious children. And I don't know, because I have, you know, I'm language limited. I don't know how the rest of the world is reporting on this. Do other parts of the world care, or are they too caught up in their own, or is it just, well, you know, Europe's doing it again after 80 years? I don't know if this helps, Megan says. A very well-attended demonstration in Prague for Ukraine. Or Zelensky talked to them. a huge gathering. Let's check out the audio. Thousands and thousands of people. The Jumbotron. Ukrainian flags waving. I wonder if we'll do anything like that. Volodymyr Zelensky spoke to the assembled thousands via a video link from Kyiv. Lee shares this from electoralvote.com today. Where there's a will, there's a way, however, and determined activists have found opportunities that escape the censor's attention. The most interesting is restaurant reviews. People are going to Yelp and Google pages for prominent restaurants in Moscow and other cities and leaving five-star reviews like these. 5,800 Russian soldiers died today, 4,500 yesterday. Stop your aggression. Don't let your kids suffer. If you go to war, you will not come back. And the food was great. Unfortunately, Putin spoiled our appetites by invading Ukraine. Stand up to your dictator. Stop killing innocent people. Your government is lying to you. Get up. Oh, that's deliciously devious. Creative, too. And Greg asking a hard question. What good did it do Vietnam when a few thousand Americans refused to be complicit and fled to Canada? What good did it do us when a few million Americans refused to be complicit in Baby Doc Bush's illegal Iraq-Afghanistan wars and protested in the streets without media coverage? Operation Ruski LNG. Randy Radar, then maybe I hope he's right. My best estimation is that nuclear war won't happen because it would mess things up too much for the ultra rich. And yes, they have bunkers in New Zealand, but they would have to have enough lead time to reliably get to them. And who the hell wants to spend the next 30 years in a bunker with a raging narcissist anyway? Sounds true. But, again, they can't be sure that Pooty is sane or screwed down. He's more and more isolated. His country is burning with COVID. And he's taking the just-let-it-burn approach. Some intelligence reports note that he's talking primarily only to his bodyguards, which means he's not getting any policy information beyond, oh, yes, boss, you're greatest maximum Russian leader since Ivan the Terrible. You're veritable Peter the Great, except for he was tall and you are Munchkin. Sorry, boss. Someone has to tell truth. Earther says, good news, bad news. The good news is that Russians have a human rights hotline. The bad news is that the calls go to Putin's desk. Bombing gays? No, it's total legal. I got some cowbells in there, Billable. The cray-cray was just such a groan. That was a gnar. I saw that coming from a mile away. Randy Radar asks, is Priest Trees better than prescription lidocaine? I have prescription lidocaine, and yes, I think it is. It works differently. Of course, Priest Trees is also not a prescription medication, which makes it also nicer. And it smells prettier, too. How about, says Jeremy in Vermont, how about the older Ukrainian women who yelled at Russian soldiers, what the fuck are you doing here, and then gave the sunflower seeds and said, put these in your pocket so when you die, you'll grow flowers. And those are the kinds of stories of heroism that we celebrate. But they don't necessarily impede the invasion. I keep thinking how much use Ukrainians, who've already been trained on them, by the way, and checked out, could make of, a couple of dozen A-10 warthogs and plenty of ammunition for them. But I do worry about the concept of manufacturing consent. And it's almost, well, if anything pushes me away from the idea, it is that so far the White Wing hasn't jumped on the beat the drums of war bandwagon because, well, Nitwit Nero hasn't told them to. And that's how that works. And so let's talk about that. When we get into the get around the extraordinary ordinary round table in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. High anxiety. Matt in San Francisco says, Megan's not the only one. I had trouble sleeping last night after watching CNN for a couple of hours, then seeing some bombing footage in raw form. The Putin thing is one big same story. He attacked us by interfering with the election and using his henchman, Manafort, to run Trump's campaign. Putin's money is laundered through 45's properties. Putin's cyber attacks, his troll farms that give rise to the conflict between Americans. Putin softened this country up, and once he knew the U.S. was at each other's throats, he took to attacking his neighbor, knowing we can't even get through a State of the Union speech without our own congresspeople shouting at the commander-in-chief. If Putin is arguably the richest man in the world, then why on earth does he need to attack Ukraine other than to increase his hold on that wealth generation? He has shown he has no depth to which he will not sink. He seems to not care about any sanctions that have been placed on him. It seems to me that he has not been stopped. It doesn't appear that he will that he'll stop with just one country. No one can eat just one. One of my earliest memories was attending an anti-war protest in Golden Gate Park at 5 years old. My mother had two sons older than I who were just about to turn draft age. I've been protesting every war since, Democrats and Republicans. However, it seems to me that the only way that Putin will be stopped is either his people unite and overthrow him, or the world unites and stops him once and for all through force. Anyway, I've gamed it out. This is not going to end without a lot more people ending up dead. It's hard to reach any other conclusion, isn't it, Matt? And by the way, just in terms of why would he do this? Well, remember, of course, now yesterday we did have the story of how Pooty once dissed Barney the Scottish Terrier. Is bigger, is with an Irish wolfhound, is bigger than Barney. And we remember how W said that he had looked into Putin's eyes and seen his soul. Of course, this was the same W who kissed Saudi barbarian leaders right on the big old mouth eater. And then there's the story of Joe Biden saying, dude, you don't have a soul. And Putin replying archly, oh, then we understand each other. Yeah. Well, he relies upon a nasty symbiotic relationship with the Russian Orthodox Church. The Russian Orthodox Church, of course, is also the source for a great deal of the homophobia and transphobia that makes life so miserable for so many people in Russia. But Putin himself, probably not a religious man. And so he has he doesn't worry about what happens in the afterlife because he realizes there very likely isn't one. And that means it's all a matter for him of grab it while you can. Grab as much as you can while you can. And there's one factor that I was, the natural gas pipelines cross Ukraine. The other night, Darlene in Connecticut pointed out that Hunter Biden is kind of low-hanging fruit here. And you have to recall, and I mean, this is not disinformation or misinformation. This is true. Because I remember when I first read about it and we talked about it here, and it gave me the creeps. Why was Hunter Biden on the board of a hydrocarbon company, a gas company in Ukraine? I didn't like it then. I don't think it's a good look now. But it does point something out. Namely that there is apparently a vast, perhaps untold amount of frackable gas under all of those Ukrainian sunflowers. And there's also a humongous gas pipeline that crosses Ukraine. And a gas pipeline is kind of like a toll road. The gas leaves Mother Russia, and the Russians sell it to, for instance, the Germans. But they have to pay what are, I guess you'd call them transfer fees, for the gas to go through the pipeline to reach Western Europe. And so a counter just clicks and clicks and clicks and clicks, and every click is money into the Ukrainian treasury. And it's not exactly chump change. Well, right there are two really, really big reasons for Putin to want to own Ukraine. It's sort of hard to miss when it finally dawns on you, like it finally dawned on me. It's not that far from what we did to Iraq in 2003. And you may recall that when we went into Afghanistan, the guy that we put up as our puppet there, was a former oil executive. And there was talk of a pipeline that would cross from Pakistan through Afghanistan, and you know, down to a sunlit sea. I guess the Russians didn't screw up, because it doesn't, maybe it doesn't work that way in Russian, but at least they did. Remember when we started, and the first name that they gave the illegal war against the innocent people of Iraq was Operation Iraqi Liberation, until some genius figured out that spelled oil, and that was just a little too obvious. There have even been, and I don't know if they were quotes, but there's even been talk about, in American multimillionaire for-profit media, as to how Russian soldiers were told they would be greeted as liberators. And I don't know if that's just a sort of a reverberation of what we told our forces going into Iraq. But of course, in neither case were they. It's another case of, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does damned well echo. Ugh, says Greg. Perhaps Putin has the same religion who you referenced earlier, his royal emperor of all the Tsars, Peter the Great, who melted all the church bells for ammo to defend Mother Russia versus Sweden. Yeah, the religion of self, I guess. Anybody seen Braveheart? Megan asks. Because what the English nobility did with the Scottish nobility is a lot like what's happening with Russia and our Congress and past presidency. The farmers fighting on the ground are hamstrung by those pledged to protect them because of the money. I hate to go there, but the only scene in my mind today was when William Wallace, regrettably played by the now gone to nut, Mel Gibson, told the Scottish that they had to invade England to stop the attacks on Scotland. He then sacked York, which was the staging ground for all attacks done on his country. So my question, Megan says, is this. What can be taken out in Russia that stops this shit? What flag aren't the Russians guarding? What can be done through the back door that destabilizes this whole invasion? I kind of wondered the same thing. But anything that violates Russian territorial sovereignty will be casus belli for seriously game on. So I get the sense that this thing has to be fought out in Ukraine. And not much. And you know, if we went into Belarus, that would be sort of the equivalent of an Article 5 kind of thing for the Russian Federation. And I suppose we're not going to do it. And so it becomes a question of how long can the Ukrainians hold out. And somewhere along the way, I have a feeling history will not judge that well. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. This from Stephen, New York. Putin's religious messianism, a quote from a link he sent from the AP. Even though Russian President Vladimir Putin justified his invasion of Ukraine in part as a defense of the Moscow-oriented Orthodox Church, leaders of both Ukrainian Orthodox factions are fiercely denouncing the Russian invasion as is Ukraine's significant Catholic minority. But from the post that Steve sent, Putin regards his spiritual destiny
as the Rebuilding of Christendom, based in Moscow. When the punk band Pussy Riot wanted to demonstrate against the president, they chose to do so in the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow, a vast white and gold edifice demolished by the Soviets and rebuilt in the 90s. It is a synthesis of Russia's national and spiritual aspirations. It is not just Russia, it is Holy Russia, part religious project, part extension of Russian foreign policy. Speaking of Vladimir's mass baptism, Putin explained, his spiritual feat for adopting orthodoxy predetermined the overall basis of the culture, civilization, and human values that unite the peoples of Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. He wants to do the same again. And to do this, he needs Kyiv back. So let's run over to the old holler tree, see who has gathered around the table. I hope we will have a rousing conversation this evening. And we've got $460 to go to finish the week. I hope we can round that up, too. And a frenzy of early month bill paying can take place. And God, it has been a brutal winter for electricity. Whew. $500 bill for about a month. Scary. Let's check in. Anybody there?
Yeah.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let me look here. Mouse, get your roll call. Okay. Well, somebody get it started.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Just got to work. Just got here, and Tracy's making dinner.
Oh, yum. That's going to be – I don't care what she's making. I know it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's sauce and meatballs and some nice garlic bread.
You wound me.
What do you need, Papa Robin? The meatballs are just so nice.
Oh God, I was on a meat for some reason or another while I was in Birmingham. I was on a meatball binge.
Were you?
Oh yeah. There were a couple of good Italian restaurants, and I was able to score some pretty decent ones. But there's nothing like homemade.
Oh yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And in fact, Ferg just brought me dinner. You know, Annette is over sitting with the teenagers until tomorrow. Uh-huh. And he whipped up a couple of hot dogs for me. And these are some beauties. Split-top brioche buns, toasted, with big all-beef Franks.
Oh, I love a good tube steak.
Yeah, yeah. What did Bourdain call it? Meat in tube-shaped form.
Yeah.
And he topped it with Thousand Island dressing and sauerkraut with caraway seeds. So it's kind of a Reuben dog.
Reuben dog. There you go.
That works. Hot dogs are a blank canvas.
That's so true. That's so true. And it reminds me that I need to make a batch of Dick Howell style hot claw, since I didn't get to go down to Florence and bring a load back.
Yeah, have you ever been to Pink's Hot Dogs out in?
No, Tracy and I have talked about that a lot. I'd love to go to Pink's someday.
I was at their Las Vegas outpost a few years back. Oh my God, the combinations of hot dogs, amazeballs!
Wow.
Yeah, the standard West Virginia dog is made. You know, we don't call it chili here. We call it sauce. But it's chili. It's a dog with mustard, onions, chili, and coleslaw.
A meat chili and no bean chili.
No beans. Yeah, that's beans and hot dog chili is an abomination.
Whatever.
I think I just made a mistake.
Hey,
Is that Steve?
Don't know.
Steve, how about... Oh, good. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I haven't heard from Steve from Georgistan. He may still be working.
Okay.
He had kind of brought tears to my eyes. He had, because you know how much he loves his mama and how much he cares for her.
Oh, yeah.
He got to visit her, and they got to take their masks off for the first time in years.
Oh, my God.
And they got to go out and sit in the warm sun together, and she was well enough that she recognized him.
And
he sent me a photo, and it was just a beautiful thing. And I know it just really, really touched him deeply.
That's lovely.
That's really good. Yeah.
And by the way, for anybody who wants to jump into the conversation, the button is up there at the top of the page at headon.live. It'll carry you anonymously into the conversation. So feel free if you want to jump in and we'll figure out who you are, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm pretty sure Steve from Georgetown will be in a little bit later because we texted earlier today, and he said, I hope to see you on the porch. So I take that as he will be here. He's just busy.
Okay. Thanks, Roger. I appreciate it. I know that the chat commentary was running hot and heavy during the Filler Robster. Anybody want to bring that out into the light?
Well, I'd like to comment on the one that Jeremy just posted with regarding to the Polish pilots who apparently, if I'm reading sort of between the lines on the article, they tried to go to the Air Force base and hop in their planes and go
Roger,
Ukraine.
Roger, stop. It's okay. Satire. It's satire.
Okay, I missed the satire.
Yeah, it's a joke because every A-10 pilot in the world right now is clenching their teeth just wishing they could be over that column of tanks. That's what it was basically saying.
I'm sure that column just looks like lunch to an A-10 pilot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they train for their whole lives and being told to sit on their heels because Russia said, we'll nuke the first person that helps Ukraine.
They kicked out Twitter and Facebook. You see that today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Still got TikTok.
Well, as bad as Facebook can be, if you're a little bit selective, it is a method of transferring information quickly all the way around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just have to be a little bit selective in what you take and what you don't, and people can get suckered like I did on the Polish pilot number. It seemed to me to be kind of plausible that the pilots were trained and the planes were there and they had access to the airport. Well, shit, why not? It's just a short hop, skip, and a jump
right, to
go after it. So, I mean, it would be a plausible number. I just wish a whole lot of these hop-headed oath keepers, one percenters.
Yeah, pack up and go.
All the rest of that. Grab your AR-15, grab all your stored up ammunition, and hop on a plane to Poland and go across the border.
Yeah, but you know what? I've thought that too, Roger, but it might not be the smartest idea because it may bring them back home with ideas.
Yeah, there's that.
Well, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade from the Spanish Civil War, a whole lot of them, when Spain finally asked them to leave, turned around and joined the U.S. Army, including my sister's godfather, who gave his life on Leyte for the United States, was battlefield commission. And the medal right below the Medal of Honor, is that the Distinguished Service Cross? I'm not sure. But the one just below, he's the only person I know that got it from both the Spanish Civil War and the United States Army. And he got two of them in the U.S.
Yeah, but Roger, there's only one problem with that. The people who went over and fought in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade were actually people who believed in America. They were, you know, they believed in the Republican cause. They were fighting on the communist side of the Spanish Civil War. The Oath Keepers and the Free Percenters ain't that.
No, and this particular individual was born in Germany. And had to apply for citizenship a second time because he missed his interview because he was in boot camp headed overseas to the Pacific. They wouldn't let him fight in the Atlantic side, but the Pacific side. Hermann Botcher is the name.
How many people were in that Abraham Lincoln outfit? You know?
Ooh, don't know offhand, but I'll look it up and get back to y'all.
Well, I'm just sitting here eating a hot dog, so why don't I do that and save everybody the trouble?
Those toasted buns sound pretty good.
Oh, brioche buns, no less.
Brioche buns, too, yeah.
I like the video of the older lady in Ukraine this week who was yelling at Russian soldiers, basically, what the fuck are you doing here? And when they wouldn't answer, she handed them a handful of sunflower seeds and literally said, put these in your pocket so when you die, you'll sprout sunflowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about that.
2,800 at the end served the Abraham Lincoln Brigade.
Okay, yeah. Well, that was a good size amount of people.
Started out with 98.
Wow.
681 were KIA. Oh, yesterday, this is just kind of funny. Yesterday, I said, oh, and Elon Musk has a warning.
Yeah.
To what Ukraine. Did he say? I checked it out after the program.
Yeah.
Important warning. Starlink is the only non-Russian communication system still working in some parts of Ukraine, so probability of being targeted is high. Please use with caution. Talking about, you know, cyber warfare. So basically, it was an advertisement for Starlink. Shut up, Elon.
Speaking of things cyber.
Hey, Scott.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Oh, fine as frogs here.
Come here and give me a big old kiss. I'll put my teeth in.
Yeah, no.
let me wind them up first. Okay.
Wait, let me wind them up for, okay, winning.
I have noticed on one of my email accounts, and I have two that I use with some regularity, on the non-Gmail email account, since all of this started in the last 10 days or so, I have gotten an ungodly amount of spam. And I don't mean the canned breakfast meat.
It's not just for breakfast.
Well, yeah, that's true. You can do a lot with spam.
You can make sushi out of it.
I once made a doorstop out of spam. You got to get it hard. But is this just
now? Kevin and Tracy are trying to cook dinner right now, so take it easy, all right?
I know.
Our dinner's done.
But, I mean, I imagine you get a fair amount of spam just in the regular course of things, Robin.
Oh, dear God.
But I don't really
get Donald Trump alone is good for, you know, 50 emails a day.
And I'm wondering if, you know, if the little cyber ninjas or whoever the fuck they are over there have been ordered by Putin to wreak havoc wherever and whenever they can. It pisses me off. It just pisses me off. But otherwise, everything here is just tickety-boo.
Oh, and this is particularly on Instagram, but other platforms as well. Follows and friendship requests by skeevy old dudes with one post and a private account and following 5,000 trans women has gone through the roof.
Well, I had a suggestion. I meant to send this to you the other night when you were talking about it. If any of them say, hey, baby, I'd sure like to get in your pants, you tell them, well, go right ahead. There's one ass in there already. You can keep it company.
Well, no, I'm just telling them, run on down to Goodwill, because that's where they all are.
There you go. I don't know. Just on a serious note, in the past couple of days, I don't get weepy very often. You know, I'm one of those stoic types who doesn't really cry easily. But I felt almost on the verge of just busting right out. And that's not like me. And it's, you know, they say that I had a friend who told me that I have a, you know, and I'm an empath in some ways. I think that was the word that they used. And it's just, you know, and it's not just what's going on. It's the feeling that there doesn't seem to be a damn thing anybody can do other than send positive thoughts and energy. And even that, one wonders how much good it'll do.
Yeah.
And it's unlike the COVID thing that we've been going through, going into 3 years now. At least if you're a responsible human being, you can take actual steps and do or not do certain things that are going to be better for all concerned. But in this case, it's like we were talking about the other day. There are plenty of issues and problems, seemingly not even remotely. They're like the ultimate Rubik's Cube, you know? And there just doesn't seem to be any move that can be made that's not going to result in just all manner of hell breaking loose.
Did anybody catch former director, CIA director John Brennan's thoughts? It was yesterday or 2 days ago. It was yesterday on about 4:30. He said he feels that Putin's days are numbered, and he thinks he followed that up saying that they're going to probably be in the double digits. In other words, 99 days or less, you know.
What, due to medical reasons or something falling?
Well, I don't know. It sounded like
the sky.
Maybe lead poisoning, or maybe a little, you know, little poke with a polonium-tipped umbrella. You know, it says right there in the New Testament, him what lives by the polonium-tipped umbrella shall die by the polonium-tipped umbrella.
Yeah.
And there won't be time to cut off a centurion's ear. Centurion.
I've heard from multiple military higher uppers that the Russians may make it into Kiev, but they may never make it out. They may be cut off and basically slaughtered inside the city because people are so pissed off.
They're going to have to keep going, do things by the air. That's about the only way they're going to be able to do anything. Because on the ground, I don't see them making a lot of headway. And then once, even the cities that they're in now and patrolling, they're sitting ducks, you know, these soldiers that are walking around, you know, acting like policemen now. You know, they can't be too comfortable, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, Putin was saying, what, 500 guys? The Ukrainians are saying it's over 6,000. And if it's 6,000, they've lost more in, what, 15 days than we lost in 20 years in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And more than they've lost in any war in the last basically 40 years, they've lost in 15 days against a country a third of their size. And I don't care what Putin says. We know he's a liar. He underthought what was going to happen to his people. He thought it was going to roll in, they're going to pull over and play dead. And I know what Robin said about what he wants, but you also have to realize he sees Ukraine as a democracy. He knows the Russian people are going to see them having a good life, seeing what they have. He wants to crush it. That's all he really wants.
You can't stand it. Yeah, you're right, Jeremy.
Well, I just saw a post from a friend of mine. quoting someone else, and I think it's a great question. Why isn't Mother Rittenhouse taking young Kyle to Ukraine?
Because he'd want to protect Russian property.
And again, why aren't the Proud Boys, the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff, and the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters? Why, really? Why aren't they there? Why haven't they packed up and gone?
Because in war like paintball, you don't get a second shot.
And maybe because they wouldn't last 15 minutes in the field.
No, we've all said for ages now, all these Aryans or whatever you want to call them, and one percenters and oath keepers and all these shitheads, if you put them up against a platoon of full Marines, they'd piss their pants and run away.
Oh, and a little reminder,
how
time flies. Frank out in Iowa says, don't forget that the former guy appointed Rex Tillerson, president of Exxon, as his first Secretary of State. Rex had no previous governmental experience at all. And, of course, he was working on, an oil deal with Mother Russia. I remember us talking about it at the time. And God, I can never be reminded of Rex Tillerson without hearing in my mind the voice of John Goodman playing Rex Tillerson on Saturday Night Live saying, one minute you're the CEO of the most powerful oil company in the world, and the next minute you're getting fired by a guy who sells meat through the mail. I know. It was just a beautiful moment. Oh, and by the way, TV viewing tip for anybody who... season 2 of The Righteous Gemstones is really good. Really, really good.
And anybody who's ever been in either gotten hooked on a TV ministry and or been in a megachurch will immediately relate to that foolishness. And they, I mean... and they did the finale, the season finale. I can't wait for it to come back, and it only just left this past Sunday.
I know. I mean, haven't gotten to the finale yet, but I got a sneaking suspicion it's going to be a doozy.
Oh, you didn't see it Sunday?
No.
Oh. Well, yeah, I'm not going to try a spoiler or anything. Just watch it.
I mean, baby Billy just... Oh, my God.
Baby, Uncle Baby Billy.
Yeah, Uncle Baby Billy. And Daddy Roy.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. This is all inside jokes. We're laughing about things that other people haven't seen yet. Hey, Mark in Florida just sent this along. Russian accent, please, Robin. I am shooting you. You're shooting me? And reports of a significant, don't laugh, Robin. Reports of a significant, but somehow or another this is going to wind up being a joke on one of the late night programs. Reports of a significant armor engagement in a suburb of Kyiv between Russian forces. Friendly fire resulted in the loss of 9 tanks and 4 infantry fighting vehicles. I'm shooting you. You're shooting me? Thanks, Mark. Oh, and by the way, thanks to Brian. Thank you, Brian. We are now down to $435 to go to finish the week. $135 to finish yesterday and $300 to finish today. So we've made considerable progress. Thank you, Brian.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah, Steve, what's up?
I can elaborate on my assertion, if you wish.
Yeah, much worse than a war crime?
Yes. First of all, we have to go back to what's called the IMT, which is right after World War II, called the International Military Tribunal, at which point the only There were basically four, what eventually would become called the four core crimes in international humanitarian law. The first one was called aggressive war, also called the crime of aggression. Then there was war crimes, and there was crimes against humanity, and then there was genocide. Aggressive war slash the crime of aggression was a very new concept at the time, and in fact, no person whom the tribunal charged with that was sentenced to death based upon being guilty of the crime of aggression. But the crime of aggression is essentially that you attack a country that didn't attack you. And I believe it was Justice Jackson described it as the crime that encompasses all other crimes. So in the what was called the Rome Statute, which was the statute slash treaty that established the International Criminal Court, the only crimes that the court prosecutes are the crime of aggression, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide.
The crime of aggression goes to the statement by Justice Jackson. Germany needs to understand we are not punishing them because they lost the war. We are punishing them because they started it.
Correct. I mean, frankly, that you know, there was a lot of people who have made a number of complaints about the International Military Tribunal, and a lot of the German defendants, and even I don't remember what the one was. There was a separate tribunal in Japan for Japanese, the equivalent of the Japanese High Command. And one of the defenses that they said was, "Wait a minute, you're prosecuting us under a law that was not acknowledged until after we committed it." And the way that the tribunal got around that was to basically say, "Well, I mean, really, you had to be told that genocide was wrong before we prosecute you under that. So you had, you know, before we actually said this is illegal." I only bring that up because that was one of the defenses that a lot of the defendants made, and you can read a fair number of legal scholars who will say that was actually a legitimate defense to the crimes that the tribunal accused them of. And then the other issue is this really nothing more than the victors prosecuting the vanquished? Because frankly, I mean, there's plenty of war crimes, and in fact, bombing civilian populations intentionally so that the Allies did, and I think, at least in Europe, the most famous was probably the firebombing of Dresden. And certainly Hiroshima and Nagasaki are also, you know, the two biggest examples of war crimes.
Yeah. Or, you know, the firebombing of Tokyo did more damage, and the firestorm that it created with the incendiary bombs actually did more damage than Hiroshima.
So another war crime. But look, you know, there is,
and the rape of the rape of Nanking.
Right. I've actually wondered if this notion of trying to place rules on war is just silly. And that the only way, first of all, I suspect that war is never going to go away from part of the human condition. It's never going to go away.
I'm of the opinion, Steve, that it is not part of the human condition. It is part of the sedentary agricultural human condition. There's a difference. There is a difference.
But there's always going to be wars. So and my way of thinking is it's absurd to try to say, yes, well, you can't bomb civilians. That's a bridge too far. I almost take the view that the only way we would ever at least mitigate or minimize wars is to make them so truly horrible is that people would lose the stomach for it.
Well, what did that nasty, noble appearing, gray bearded old traitor Robert E. Lee say? It is a good thing that war is so terrible, lest we should love it too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, along those lines, what was it? Stalin who said, "A single death is a tragedy." A million deaths is a statistic.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is as I was thinking about what can... And I heard a general, I think he was former head of the UK, or either UK or NATO command, where he talked about having a no-fly zone. And what he said is it would not be possible to do because... the Russians could cause, you know, just as much damage from mobile or stationary batteries within Russia because how close it is to Ukraine, that what that then would do is take the theater of battle actually into Russia.
So maybe the Ukrainians need some of those Patriot missile batteries we're all the time sending to Israel.
Well, no. There's something actually better called THAAD, which is – it used to be called Theater High Altitude Air Defense. I actually worked on the contract that dealt with that a million years ago. I looked it up just to make sure that something else hadn't replaced it, and it hasn't. They've just changed the name to Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. And these are basically much more sophisticated Patriots that are within the theater of – battle that will shoot down missiles. They're not intended to be ground-to-air anti-aircraft guns. That's something that Stinger missiles would be very good for. And the advantage of that, of a Stinger missile, is they're, you know, it's an individual with a gun on their shoulder, so they're mobile.
Yeah.
So you can shoot and run.
We've apparently taken out, not we, but the Ukrainians have apparently taken out a few... Russian choppers that way. Listen, I think we all need kind of a giggle now and then, and I know this is no laughing matter, but I have happened upon a guy on Twitter whose handle is 3-Year Letterman, and he is an absolutely rabid Bulldogs fan. He's from down where? He's from down in Brother Bishop Steve country. And he responded to a tweet from BNO News the other day. The original tweet said, "Breaking, Georgia plans to submit an application to join the European Union on Thursday." And he replied, I am shaken with rage. How on earth can they justify leaving the SEC for some European soccer league? The SEC is the oldest. The SEC is the oldest and greatest conference in the oldest and greatest country on earth. And so then I went over and found his Twitter feed, and oh my God, somebody took him seriously. He tweeted to the governor of Georgia. "Governor, we should just tell him America is the oldest and greatest country on earth and the Soviet Union has zero SEC championships." Some poor soul who took it seriously said, "The Soviet Union? Wow. Tell me you know nothing about geopolitics without telling me you know nothing about geopolitics." And he responded, "I literally own a vintage globe."
Oh, and that is precious.
And he subtweets BNO News again. He subtweets BNO News again saying, "Georgia plans to submit an application to join the European Union on Thursday. I've left Kirby Smart no fewer than 20 voicemails today to get to the bottom of this."
And by vintage globe, it's a really old one. It's so old, it's got dragons coming out of each ocean to frighten the people in their sailing vessels. Do you remember when maps used to have those?
Oh, yeah. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Here be monsters.
You know the map that I like.
Wait, hold on. Here's,
Go ahead.
Brian Tyler Cohen tweeting, new, both Georgia and Moldova apply to join the European Union. He subtweeted that with, and how many times has Motorola won an afternoon road game in Colombia in early September? This guy's brilliant. Go ahead, Scott. Bueller?
Scott, you're on mute.
So, yeah, I was looking for something. I'm going to try to find the map that I rather than refer to it. If I can find it, I'll post it in the chat because my version of it won't do it justice. So go ahead. I'll be back.
Yeah, this is one of those awkward silences.
Was I being too pedantic on the war crime stuff?
I didn't think so at all. That popped up in my feed, and it was like, oh, my God, nice chair. How many SEC
That's perfect. I just
join a that. European soccer league.
And then the best part is the doofus who thinks he's serious.
Yeah, well. But the thing is, you can fall for it because it is not unexpected. Confirmation bias is a real thing.
Scott. I just posted the map in the chat, and it's from any number of Three Stooges World War II films where Mo is Hitler. And anyway, you can look at it. It's a visual, but hard to translate on radio.
Vladov Putler. War plus a Star Trek reference, Jack in Shreveport writes, on the other end of the spectrum, rather than making war so horrible it would be avoided, what about making it as agreeable as possible, like the Star Trek episode that had people report to vaporization booths when a war simulation reported their location and person successfully destroyed? Yuck. And remember, Alfred Nobel, father of the Nobel Prize, inventor of TNT, created the Nobel Prize because of the money he made off TNT, and when he invented TNT, he did so thinking he would create a weapon so horrible, war would become unthinkable. And then all the governments ordered TNT. Same thing for the guy who invented the Gatling gun, which becomes the machine gun. This will be so horrible, no one will ever want to use it in a war. Wrong you are, Les.
Well. It wouldn't the end of war be more likely if there were no profit in it? If companies did not make any money, really?
I don't think so. I mean, war is in, you know, animals, particularly chimpanzees, and some gorillas go to war. It's not profit. At least in terms of humans, I think it's much more basic. It's haves and have-nots.
But the implements of war, the implements of destruction, have got to be made, unless we go back to the days when we had sharp sticks and rocks.
But I think it you could argue that it's grown into that.
Well, and again, we come back to my theory about sedentary agricultural humanity. Because we have examples among hunter-gatherer societies that have been documented in the last century. And their idea of warfare is to stand about 100 yards apart and scream at each other for a while. And then they throw some rocks and trade women. And nobody gets killed. As far as we can tell, the rise of bloodletting warfare happens with the arrival of sedentary agricultural societies. you know, Çatalhöyük, Fertile Crescent, Mesopotamia, because then you amass enough stuff that somebody else will want your stuff. I mean, I remember, I don't play music here very often, but it almost, this seems to be appropriate. Let me see if I can find it. No, not on that one. I'll have to do it on this one. It's so complicated sometimes. There it is. I mean, this comes, yeah, this definitely comes to mind. There's no, they might be giants. It's just so awesome.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back, but no one's ever seen us.
No one's ever seen us
driving our Econoline.
Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh.
Then they wouldn't understand a word we say, so we'll scratch it all down into the clay. Half believing there will sometime come a day someone gives a damn. Maybe when the concrete has crumbled to the sand, we're the Mesopotamians, Sargon. The Mesopotamish sun is beating down and making cracks in the ground, but there's nowhere else to stand in Mesopotamia. The kingdom where we secretly.
Well, somebody's gonna, a bunch of people are gonna be earwormed now trying to remember Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. I thought that, you know, but that's where the whole, you know, war thing starts. Did I mute everybody again? No.
I think you did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, you didn't. Well, the other thing too is when you're hunter gatherers, you know, you're running around all day, you know, and you face off with each other and you yell at each other. It's, you just get to the point where you're like, this, you know, I'm tired. I've been running around all day looking for dinner.
I just want to go home and chew on a hallucinogenic root.
Yeah. Or, you know, cook whatever I got and sit and, you know, watch some cave paintings and,
watch some cave paintings.
Okay.
That was good. That was good.
And then head off to bed.
Let's see what's on. Let's check out and see what's on Antelope this week.
ABC, the Antelope Broadcasting Network.
But I mean, we're finding out more and more about hunter gatherer societies. I mean, the fact that, one of the things I think that comes with the rise of sedentary agriculturalism is, of course, you get much more organized religious structures. Religious structures are also engines of warfare because the god wants you to do this, the god wants you to do that. We know from one archaeological discovery that in at least a hunter-gatherer society, women were excellent hunters because the previous model, sexist that it is, said, no, you know, that the in hunter-gatherers, you know, the men went out and did the hunting and the women folk stood around and did the gathering and they knew about the roots and berries and you know which mushrooms would make you see paisley skies and the which ones would make you die. May not be the case. And of course the other thing that comes along, and you can see reference to it in the book of Genesis, is that point in time when the matriarchy gets overthrown by the patriarchy. And it's not a good time. Earther seems to be in agreement. War is not part of the human condition. It's also a result of our culture and identity. Whom do we view as part of us or like us, and who are the others? Do we see ourselves as citizens of XYZ country or citizens of the world? It sounds silly to say I'm a Florida citizen. Floridians are the best. Will we reach that point about Americans, French, etc.? We're being proud about that. Sounds ludicrous. That would require us to have a common identity connection as humans as part of our zeitgeist. We build that sense of connection around language, geography, skin color, etc. We need to build a global culture and one built around well-being, connection to the ecology that sustains mutual aid, etc. And not the current global identity built around trade and corporations. Absolutely true on in every statement, Earther. In fact, saying, you know, identifying, like Earther says, you know, I'm a Floridian. Well, Kurt Vonnegut... Kurt Vonnegut came up, but he invented his own word for it. He said it was either FOMA or a Grandfaloon. And he dated his invention of the term to a conversation he had with a woman on an airplane who said, "You're from Indiana? I'm from Indiana. We're Hoosiers." When there was nothing to suggest that they had anything in common whatsoever. So that. What's this? Russia, coming from the right-wing rag Newsweek, Russia has established effective dominance over the skies of Ukraine, leaving little room for Kyiv's remaining warplanes to operate, even as Moscow sends in an apparently stalled, vulnerable convoy of reinforcements, yada, yada, yada. Ward Carroll, a retired U.S. Navy commander who flew combat missions in the F-14, interviewed by Newsweek, said they're essentially grounded, the Ukrainian Air Force. If they fly, they die. Jesus. Which is kind of weird because at the same time, I'm looking at a story that says it's a pilot. Where'd it go?
No.
Former F-22 pilot on Russia failing to establish air superiority, but that comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
You know, one thing I sit back and look at what Putin's doing here right now.
Yeah, hey, Ben.
I honestly think the man has a death wish.
How come?
Because they say that there's something wrong with him there. I've been hearing for a while now that they say he's got Parkinson's.
Is that anything that can be?
Yeah, it's treatable, but I mean.
No, I don't mean treatable, verifiable.
I don't know. I've just been hearing it from people over on John's thing and the Blue Dot. Blue Dot Hank was talking about it this week. And a couple other people, and Blue Dot Hank is actually over there in the Netherlands. He's closer to it than we all are, and he's been hearing a lot of things about different things about Putin.
Here's the problem with the death wish, though, and this shows up every so often in news headlines where Mr. So-and-so of someplace blew away six members of his family and then turned the gun on himself. Well, the order of worship here is way backwards. If you've got a death wish, Mr. So-and-so from someplace, turn the gun on yourself and leave the rest of your family the fuck out of it. You know, certainly there are plenty of ways Mr. Putin can off himself if he just doesn't see the sense in living anymore. But leave Ukraine alone. Leave the rest of us alone. You know?
Hello?
Here you go.
Hello.
Okay. I don't want to interrupt anybody. I heard a call today, a call-in show, again, that I listened to. It's out of London, and they had a woman call in today. She was part of the – she was in Hungary, I believe, in 1958, and she and her family got out. She was very, very – she was an infant, family got out, ended up got to the UK, got asylum. Her mother, she said, went to school. I think she said she studied, international, something politics, and commented that she thought, her mother said, like she said, it was 20 years ago or more that she saw Putin as another Stalin. And the woman also made this interesting point or observation that, by the way, you got to be careful reading The Sun. That's a Rupert Murdoch publication. She said that he is a person, he's probably nearing 70, and he's looking for his legacy. He has said that the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. And to him, it's about Greater Russia. And, you know, there is that vein of Christian messianism in him. And it's apparently a view that a lot of, those of Russian Orthodox ilk hold, is that Moscow is basically the new Rome, or the third Rome. And that enters into all of this as well. I think there's something cultural here, in addition to, you know, we have to never forget how he grew up, or where he grew up, or where he cut his teeth in his early career was, you know, as an agent of KGB. And I think, I believe somebody said it on the program here one time, or I heard it somewhere, that his first assignment was in East Germany, or at least he spent a good amount of time in East Germany. So he was well aware of the reach of the Soviet sphere of influence, we'll call it. And as all of that disappeared, it would make one suggest that he took that personally. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm talking out of my asshole as well, just like everybody else here who isn't him. But,
well,
that strikes me as just as plausible. I also think that the strategy has changed in Ukraine. I think the original strategy was to occupy the country and basically make it a satellite state. And he has seen how poorly the whole thing has gone. You know, now they've started using cluster bombs and bombing
vacuum bombs,
civilian areas. Yeah. And, you know, I think he wants to just destroy the country out of a sense of vindictiveness. Fine.
I got a question, Steve. Do we have a sense of, or do you have a sense of what the rank and file Russian people think about this? Was there any burning groundswell of public opinion to go into Ukraine? I have not heard of such a thing.
You know, it's interesting you say that. First of all, I don't know, but I heard a person who, she is Russian, I believe. She's in Ukraine, and her mother is still in Russia. And she showed her mother pictures of the bombed out area wherever she is in Ukraine, and her mother failed to believe that there actually was a war going on. Even the pictures, she said, I don't know. It's not true.
And yet there are thousands of people on the streets of St. Petersburg and Moscow.
And all over the place.
And that denial of reality, we've had a lot of that in this country, in the last 5 years or so, where you can give people actual verifiable statistics and color photos.
You can show them pictures, Scott. You show them pictures. Here, look at this here. This sky is blue. No.
Well, look at the denial over January 6th.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that trial is well underway now. The first day of testimony was yesterday. And today, some of, what's his name? Guy Reffitt. One of his buddies testified today and said that wanted to drag lawmakers out by their heels. This one witness, whose name is Hardy, said both he and Guy Reffitt were packing heat on the Capitol grounds, and he met Reffitt through the Free Percenters. And he said, in life, most people talk, but they don't do. He seems to be a person that actually does things and gets things done. Jesus.
You know, did you guys see the picture posted earlier this week of Putin and the meeting he had with his generals and everything, and how far away at the end of the desk he was sitting from him?
Yeah.
Well, now he's not even doing that. Now he's doing Zoom meetings with them because he heard that one of them wants to take him out.
Got a source on that?
No, but I've heard from people over on the Blue Dot group that
I don't think that's what it is. I think he's terrified of COVID.
Yeah, he's germophobic.
Yeah.
Well, but also, Robin, you brought up the fact that bulletproof vests and that kind of thing only work at a distance. They don't work for really up close. I think you were the one that brought that up.
I don't know if I was or not, but I remember when back when Gordon Liddy had his right-wing hate fest radio show, and he advised his listeners to always shoot at the cops at their heads. Because, you know, there's no Kevlar face mask.
Well, now we got to start
doing an ex-oligarch who moved out of Russia and either lives here or Britain, who claimed that he would give $1 million to anyone inside Russia that kills Putin. But it has to be someone inside Russia, so it is an outside country.
Yeah, I mean, we legally prevent ourselves from doing that.
Well, the other night I watched that Tom Cruise movie where he plays the German soldier with the eye patch.
Oh, yeah. Valkyrie.
Yeah, and leaves a briefcase loaded with explosives during a meeting with Hitler in one of the meeting rooms in a bunker. And it gets botched up. They put it under the table so that the blast doesn't do anything. But what you're describing is somebody on the inside who has not signed on to this nonsense needs to figure a way to out him. And I don't mean, you know, in the way that we normally think of outing someone. But where are you going to find such a person? You got to figure that the high level military leadership is with him. And
that's the source of his success. He didn't just get all the goodies for himself. When the Soviet Union fell in 1991, he was in Dresden in East Germany. I talked about this last night. And they came home and started stealing and laundering money. And he brought other people in with him, because that's a way to keep people motivated to not put a bomb under your desk.
Did you see that video from about a week ago where he's meeting with the various officials? And it seemed to be a non-military person. He was in a regular business suit. And he didn't phrase something in precisely the way that Putin wanted to
hear it. Yeah, that was the head of his spook service. That was the head of the FSB.
And he dressed him down and then up one side and right down the other.
Yeah, he cross-examined him.
Never hear from him again, probably.
Gone out in the rain in a polonium-tipped umbrella yet. But you mentioned the plot against Hitler. Apparently, Lady G, South Carolina's senior, incredibly butch senator, Lindsey Graham, He must have watched the movie, too, because he made, in an interview on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, he made specific reference to, what was the guy's name, Stauffenberg?
Who are we talking about?
The German who tried to kill Hitler with a bomb.
That was his name. I believe that was his name.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, Robin. He's calling for Biden to go assassinate him.
You know what? He should just fucking shut.
You do it. You do it, Lindsay. You big old tough strong man. You
hypocrite that he is.
Put on your most fetching gown with the biggest hoops.
Let's not go there.
It's a good thing for Lindsay to.
No, he can put on his bat. He can put on his Batman suit with all the built-in muscles.
Lindsay's being a fucking hypocrite.
But it's
got to
be an assless Batman suit.
Guys, Lindsay's being a fucking hypocrite The reason why I say that Lindsay's though being a fucking hypocrite because he was over there in 2018 when they went over there. He was some of the guys that went over there with McConnell and
right, and that's the answer. Well, let's talk about your little 4th of July trip to Moscow, Lindsay.
And then he was over there again on when they went over there on January 4th in 2020, 2 days before the insurrection.
That was 2021.
Does Putin play golf?
No, is not nearly manly and Russian enough to be playing silly Scottish game.
No, if he does, they could send Lindsay over armed with a 9-iron or something and send him a message, the PGA
but
way.
Mashy Niblick.
Yeah, but then Lady G said, and Biden doesn't have the balls to do it.
Well, I'm sure Putin uses golf clubs, just not in the traditional sense.
Lindsey Graham does not realize Biden does not want to get us into another conflict, and Biden wants to, at all costs to avoid nuclear war.
Yeah, Putin is very, very butch and uses golf clubs for baby seal hunting. No, that one fell flatter than piss on a plate.
Has anybody got an update on that Europe's largest nuclear power plant in the southern area of Ukraine?
Yeah, we talked about that at the beginning of the program. They have it, and it is apparently not. Wreck the reactor. No.
Detonating reactors. Okay, good.
Well, by the way, that thank you to Kevin and Tracy. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Tracy. We are now down to 365 bucks to go to, 60 dollars to go to finish yesterday, 360 to go to finish the week. Thank you both. I know we're, it's hard not to talk about the war, but I think we do need to sort of be able to sneak over and focus on stuff here at home. We have more January 6th news. 68-year-old man was sentenced when he attacked the Capitol of the United States. He was wearing a hat that read CNN, fake news. And he attacked several different officers. Duke Edward Wilson of Nampa, Idaho, got 51 months of prison and 36 months of supervised probation and a $2,000 fine from Judge Royce C. Lamberth. And Lamberth gave him the statutory max. And Lamberth said the insurrection was a horrible day for our country. It's a message that the court has to send that our country cannot deal with that. And from the Idaho Press report, U.S. Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gonnell told the judge during the hearing that he's still suffering from the injuries he got from Wilson's attack, had surgeries to fuse a bone in his foot and to repair his shoulder, and may need additional shoulder surgeries. Now, what this old coot did was to charge a set of doors in the tunnel and stopped officers from closing them, and then he tried to beat on the officers with a thin PVC pipe that he found laying on the ground. 51 months. And that was the statutory max. Jesus. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
I'm just lovely. Fine. Got a smile on my face. I can't complain.
No, you had a great afternoon. Wonderful.
Yes. She called me out of the blue today and wanted to come over, so I wasn't going to turn her down.
Oh, hell no.
Sorry I had to put you guys off for a while.
No, that's okay. I can hear the happy in your voice.
That's good news, Sparky.
Oh, it was great fun. We sat here and talked in the living room for about an hour or so. I showed her around. Funny thing happened, I was out in the man cave and I was ripping apart this old metal frame chair thing.
Yeah.
And I was cutting it up and breaking it up, and the leg had filled up because it was sitting outside in a junk pile. And the leg had filled up with a bunch of water, and it got all yucky and icky. And when I broke it open, it spilled all over my leg and went on the floor in the cement floor of the man cave, a big old black puddle of stuff. And then I had it on my pants, and I kept touching it with my hands. And then I kept turning my hands black. And then I touched my nose one time, and she goes, you're getting that black stuff from somewhere because it's on your nose. And we start laughing.
Oh, that's just sweet.
So I had to wash my hands, and then I had to change my clothes because I would keep touching my pants, had that black stuff on them. So it was lovely. It was nice.
I'm just made my glad. Day. I'm glad. Sparky, you damned well deserve to be happy. You absolutely do.
We've laughed and laughed and laughed today. We had fun. And then it got really cold. She decided she had to get back up the road. She lives about 15, 20 miles away from me. And this is the lady I went to high school with.
Oh, sweet.
So.
Well, if you lived in L.A., that 15 or 20 miles would be considered around the corner.
Yeah, well, it's.
I mean, 15 to 20 miles from you in just about any direction is only about 15, 20 miles.
Well, yeah, but she's got to. It takes her 5 miles to get out of the area where she lives to get to the freeway. And then she's got to. She's in Cottonwood. And then she has to drive down to Red Bluff, which is not far. I don't know if you remember going through Cottonwood, Roger.
Oh, yeah. I've been through it a couple of times.
Okay.
Make that 100. Remember, I did drive truck for a few years.
Well, she lives out in Lake California. She's got a house that's right on the little man-made lake they got out there. So she's either going to come back and see me or she's going to invite me up, one or the other. Spontaneously, hopefully, someday. We'll keep in touch over the phone, emails, that kind of thing. But anyway, you guys got along without me, right?
Yeah, with difficulty.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough, Sparky.
Trusty.
Who started the call?
Brother Deacon Asa did.
Good. I knew he'd do it.
Jimmy, well, you know, you mentioned this is someone from you went to high school with, but Jimmy in the Great Northwest wants to know how did y'all meet again?
Through a dating site.
Be darned.
And then we put two and two together, or she did. I'll be back. I got somebody knocking at my door.
Yeah, I heard that. Maybe she's back.
Well, let's get back to that sedentary farming thing.
Okay.
If anybody's ever done any farming, it's never sedentary.
Well, that's what it's referred to, though, as sedentary agriculture, meaning you're not wandering around anymore.
Well, it means that the property isn't moving around too much because you're not on the side of a volcano on an earthquake fault. But farming's hard work.
Well, it is.
And speaking of such farming.
Well, before you go there, it should note that it's been calculated in the past that hunter-gatherers actually have more leisure time than even so-called modern society.
I wouldn't doubt it. My daughter-in-law decided she wanted some grapes over at her house, and so I took some grape cuttings from my grapes and a couple other places' grapes and did the Routone number on them and put them in a pot in a little greenhouse, and I've got pretty good success rate on starting to leaf out. I've got peppers that are sprouted. I've got beets that are sprouted, kohlrabi that sprouted, lemon cucumbers that are sprouted, and ahis that are sprouted. And I just put into their flats today a little over 100 Wakatai sprouted seeds that I sprouted on paper towels in the kitchen. So spring's getting here, and I'm starting to think about the garden.
That's wonderful. Now, you said tomatoes are difficult up there, right?
Well, you can't really put them outside until after May 15th, Mother's Day or whatever. No, I've had great tomatoes up here, particularly the what I'd call the slicer heirlooms, like Cherokee Purple.
I love those.
We really, really like. And I've done a whole bunch. The little cherry tomatoes, I was doing a patch, a little triangle patch. It's not my property. It belongs to the next door neighbor, but I've got easier access to it than he does. And I grew some tomatoes, and then I wasn't going to grow anything there this last summer. And I'll be damned. Christian, are you going to get that? That's probably the tow truck. Yeah, probably. Anyhow, and I had some cherry tomatoes out there, and then I just kind of tilled them in. And I'll be damned, but cherry tomatoes came back out, and so he took care of them last year. And totally volunteer. So, no, tomatoes are easy here.
Oh, okay. I guess it was the outside part that I didn't. Or maybe somebody had said that they, like back when you were in Humboldt, that they were tough.
Oh, in Humboldt, give it up. Now, you get into the Garberville area, where the good growing area for weed, you can grow fantastic tomatoes. But along the coast, where you're have the fog mornings and evenings, tomatoes are a loss. They're outdoor.
Yeah, you probably can't get the soil warm enough.
Yeah.
Now I can grow some great tomatoes if I had water.
Oh yeah, you could.
I've done so in the past.
Yeah, well, I'm on city water, so there's no real problem here.
Well, I need to get a new well. Then I'll be back in business. I'm not going to use my neighbor's water to water tomatoes.
Well, if you did kind of a drip system on them and were kind of careful, it wouldn't be that much water.
Oh. Okay, I'll think about it then.
I mean, as long as you're not trying to do a giant garden.
No, the last I had three plants. I had one Heritage and two Early Girls. You know what Early Girl is? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like them because they're smaller, and then the Heritage ones are bigger for the slices.
Yeah, I call them hamburger tomatoes.
Yeah, because they're big enough to cover a patty.
Yeah, one slice of tomato goes on the hamburger patty. But anyhow, my asparagus hasn't started poking through yet, so spring's really not around the corner.
Yeah, I was just mentioning to a friend, and I mentioned at the top of the program too. I'm just so stoked. 75 degrees and sunny tomorrow. Oh, I'm probably going to wind up looking like I've got radiation sickness or something. But I am going out and I'm going to get some sun on my skin. Because it's just been so long. Well, the last time I felt sun on my skin was November of 2021 down at the Gulf.
It helps the vitamin D content.
Oh yeah, and I don't know. Maybe tomorrow morning I'll get up and chug a big glass of that wonderful Fairlife 2%. Stuff is so damn good.
Anyhow, that was my garden report for now.
I'm going to get a sunburn, too, but it's me reflecting off the snow on the trails.
Oh, yeah. Are you covered up nicely, Jeremy?
I won't have to be tomorrow. It's supposed to be like 32, 33. That's like almost summertime when you're on a snowmobile.
I can imagine. But doesn't that... I mean, is ice as much of a pain in the ass with a snowmobile as it is on a pair of skis?
No. I take that back. It is under certain conditions. They make things called, carbides. Basically, it's a rounded razor blade for a skate. You put it on your two front driving skis, and they cut through the ice and give you a little more traction on the pavement, but you have nothing on the pavement, really. But what really helps is, on a normal snowmobile track, they stud it with about 182 little nails. They look like nails, but they're spikes. And those grip anything you run on. So ice isn't a problem unless you try to stop on it instantly thinking you can, because nothing stops on ice.
Yeah, but that temperature of 32 degrees, if you're on that snowmobile, aren't you creating some significant wind chill factor?
I'm from the north. Wind chill's nothing. No, I'm just kidding. No, you are, but when you're on a snow machine, you're going to have a windshield. As long as you have a windshield, it gives you somewhat of a barrier and a guard, so it goes up over you theoretically.
And then you've got a full face insulated helmet, right?
I've got an insulated helmet. I wear basically a baklava on my face. It covers up to my nose, down to my chin. And then I wear multiple layers. I wear a T-shirt, a long-sleeve shirt. I wear basically long-john sweatpants, and then I have a sweatshirt, a hooded sweatshirt on top of that, and then I put a snowmobile jacket on top of that. So I'm pretty well warm. By the end of the day, I'm usually sweating because I'm so warm. And tomorrow will be no different. When it's 32 out, that's pretty warm. Actually, snow machines are meant to run much below 30s. You really don't get the high ends when it's warm out. So it'll be okay. My uncle and I went about 2 weeks ago. It was around the same temperature, being a little warmer. Will be tomorrow. It was a couple weeks ago. We both enjoyed it more than we thought we would. So I'm looking forward to it. Getting towards the ends of winter here in the north parts, but we've probably still got maybe another month where maybe we can ride if we're lucky. Maybe.
Did you say you wore a baklava?
I think Jeremy meant a balaclava.
It's not. Yeah, balaclava. Yes, the thing.
Did you say you wore a baklava?
Yeah, I just answered that. It's balaclava. Yeah.
Yes, I said it by accident. Sorry, I got the two mixed up. Yes, I know what you're saying. It's funny. I knew as soon as I said it, I was like, oh goddamn, he's wearing quiche.
Balaclava. Okay. Yeah. I was like, okay.
No. He was not wearing. He was not wearing a Middle Eastern dessert.
No, I wasn't wearing. Seals and stuff, wearing to protect their faces.
Well, but Scott, it's winter, so you don't have to worry about the ants.
Little bits of almond just flying off in all directions.
Walnut, you know, whatever.
Walnut.
You know what I love? A pistachio baklava. And a dear friend of mine makes her own recipe, and she uses orange blossom water in the syrup. And it is heavenly.
If you ever get back to D.C., when things get back to semi-normal and can do some lobbying, be sure to make a side trip over to Alexandria. If it's still there, the deli that I used to go to, I think it's called Jerry's Deli now, at the corner of King Street and West. It's not down in Old Town. It's about halfway between the river and the Masonic Temple up on the hill. Get you one of them chicken salad sandwiches or Reuben or any deli sandwich that you want, but leave room for baklava for dessert.
And my other favorite Middle Eastern dessert, and it's spelled different ways, is kanafi. It's shredded phyllo dough and like a sweetened ricotta cheese filling.
Ooh.
And again, it's got a beautiful aromatic sugar syrup over it, you know, rose water, orange blossom water, lemon blossom water, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And it is heavenly. And it basically looks like it's made out of crumbled up shredded wheat, which I think is what shredded wheat is shredded phyllo.
Is it? I didn't know that.
I mean,
once in my life before I die, I'm looking forward to having a Middle Eastern dessert in the Middle Eastern desert.
Melt before it got to you, wouldn't it?
Just trying to make up for my mixture of words.
I know, dessert, desert. And yeah, I got it. I get it. That's a gnar. That's a gnar.
I'm back, by the way. That was my cleaning people.
Oh, yeah, while you were gone, Arthur sent an email, Sparky. Now I'm imagining Sparky coming back to moderate, and it's like the Lord of the Flies. I was gone for 80 minutes. And Jimmy said, a few dating site successes. Good job, Sparky.
Well, I'm trying.
You're out there, and I admire you. Things like that are kind of difficult.
Well, I tell you, living alone sucks.
Yeah. You kind of crave
out there meeting some people and having some friends.
Yeah, damn right.
I mean, Grady's a great dog,
but even he gets tired. Even he gets tired of listening to you.
Yeah.
No, but that's just wonderful. It doesn't seem like much of a likelihood for me. You know, Annette and I are still terribly, terribly fond of each other. It's just we couldn't be married anymore because woman, she's not, you know, gay. So we've had some long conversations along those lines, and it's kind of slim pickings here. So, you know.
Well, as far as getting married again, that's out of the question.
Yeah, had enough. Once was enough, well, right?
I don't have nothing to offer now. I mean, my pensions are locked up and everything now. I'm in my frame of mind. I mean, you don't need a marriage contract to love somebody.
No, that's true. That's true. I had a nice, insightful email from Darlene in Connecticut. Putin probably gambled that Zelensky would do a Ghani of Afghanistan and flee Ukraine with his family at the first sight of a Russian tank. He also believes that democracies are inherently weak along with its people, so Ukrainians would not fight back. He may, in fact, be totally sane, but has brainwashed himself into all these insane ideas about the fall of and need to resurrect the USSR. He said the USA is a failing empire, proof in his mind that democracies don't work. The Taliban swooped in and took over Afghanistan pretty damn quickly, so why not his better-equipped military swoop in and take Ukraine? Combined with his narcissistic psychopathology, it's the perfect storm. On the other hand, I saw a statistic that 45% of Russians support the war, and that's not an insignificant number. And what does that statistic remind you of? Oh, yeah. Let's see. Let's start with Bishop Willard Romney and his binders full of women saying that 47% of the American people are takers. And then there's the rough number of people who support Nitwit Nero.
Speaking of polls.
Yes.
I got a call from the Ross Rasmussen poll.
Oh, really?
The other night. Yeah. And I went through and it's where you click one for this, click two. I mean, I was like waiting there with my finger on the whatever number it was going to be, liberal. I was going to get that because it went through conservative, somewhat conservative, moderate, somewhat moderate, and then you go somewhat liberal, liberal. And I go, okay, punch stick, bam.
Fire breathing.
I get answered every question, you know. I don't know who paid for the poll or anything, or I don't know nothing about Rasmussen. I've heard of him before, but I went straight for really liked everything Biden's doing. And all everything they try, you know, you get for or against or all that stuff. And I was just liberal as could be. It's like I'm going in, walking a battle. Just anybody that's got a D. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, at this point in time, it's the only hope our country has is that a lot more people are like that. Good news coming out of North Carolina, Sparky. You'll get a kick out of this. Young liar Madison Cawthorn, who actually has a seat in the House of Representatives. Well, he took his complaint to the federal court, his complaint that the 14th Amendment cannot be used to keep him off the ballot. You might recall it says that you can't be a member of the Congress if you participated in an insurrection. And yes. And so lawyers have filed to get him off the ballot because of his participation in January 6th. So he went whining off to the U.S. District Court, where he ran across Chief District Judge of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina, Judge Richard E. Myers. And Judge Myers said that the courts are duty-bound, oath-bound, to protect both the soapbox, the ballot box, and the jury box. And Myers said, when those fail, that's when people proceed to the ammunition box. Here's the funny part. Myers is a maggot judge. He was appointed in 2019 by Nitwit Nero.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of those types robed up.
Oh, wait. No. I'm sorry. I read that whole thing wrong. The maggot judge said they can't keep Cawthorn off the ballot. He did his maggot job. And he claimed that in 1872, Congress passed an amnesty law that abrogated the 14th Amendment's disqualification clause. Shit. I was about to be all happy and stuff.
Well, and see, that's, you know, with the judges at the federal level, that's going to continue to be an issue and a problem in certain places, because I'm not going to say they're bought and paid for, but they are of a mindset, you know, like the Scalia mindset and
Oh, sure.
You know, and that's, you know, when your judicial system is set up in that way, and thankfully, I think Biden has appointed way more judges, or significantly more judges, in his short time in office to sort of, you know, to address the issue. And I'm sure there's a lot of federal judges who would have liked to have retired, you know, in the past 5 years, but didn't, simply because they didn't want any more fucking vacancies to fill. And McConnell, every time he gets a chance, he crows about what a fine job the former president did in filling these federal judgeship vacancies. And it's just, you know, I'm glad that, I mean, I thank my upright Anglo-Saxon deity every morning, noon, and night that things went the way they did in 2020 in terms of Biden getting in. He wasn't my first choice, but goddamn, he's still way better.
I have never been, Scott, I've said it time and time again, I've never been so happy to be so wrong as I was wrong about Biden.
Well, and people, maybe you mentioned it, how, or I saw it on TV, where certain individuals either grow into the job, or they
That's
bring
me.
With them. Okay, well, you say it better than I do, so you go ahead and say it.
What, the presidency makes the president, not the president makes the presidency?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just...
Hi.
My pizza here?
I don't know. I'm trying to mute the people that are doing that.
Yeah, somebody was.
Oh, by the way, Jack has his hand up.
Oh, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I had a question, kind of, I don't know, legal or maybe a constitutional question, kind of along the line to that Hawthorne thing, but also kind of on the Bush v. Gore thing. Is okay. They said like. I'm kind of assuming maybe on the Hawthorne thing that part of it might be like Bush v. Gore, and like, you know, we couldn't do the injunction because Bush would get him, the individual person, would have got irretrievable harm. Okay, but what about weighing that against irretrievable harm against the voting public, which I would presume would have a higher, you know, weight if you're weighing things in the Constitution. Okay, and that goes the same with, you know, wouldn't people be damaged by Hawthorne if he was guilty? And it looks like he is, right? If a, you know, a real judge would say, you know, yeah, I've seen the tapes and blah, blah. You know, there's probably evidence, you know, to show that the guy, you know, is guilty of the thing. And it seems like the whatever that statute or whatever that abrogated the Constitution, the amendment, that seems like that would be lower than an amendment. So what's y'all's thought on that? Is that. Why wasn't that taken into account, or was it totally blown off?
Well, what you're talking about, Jack, is the standard for pleading an extraordinary writ. A writ of mandamus is what is referred to as an extraordinary writ. It was an old equity proceeding. And in order to get a writ of mandamus, you have to prove that the petitioner will suffer irreparable harm. And so it gets pled that way, and you have to present evidence that way. And frankly, the irreparable harm to the people, or to, say, the Republic, or, you know, a million innocent Iraqi civilians, well, they weren't before the court. And the court can only consider what's in front of it. I think Bush v. Gore was wrongly decided, horribly decided, and I hope when Sandra Day O'Connor's memorials are put up that they add, you know, below First Woman Justice of the Supreme Court, fucked America, gave us George W. Bush, led to the deaths of a million innocent Iraqi civilians. Hope she's burning in hell.
Yeah.
Because like I've said time and time again, breaking gender barriers is huge. But it matters who's doing the breaking. I usually bring up the idea of, I don't know, President Sarah Palin. Ooh, we need a woman president. Here's Sarah.
Jesus,
no.
Don't get me. Don't. I don't even want to think about that. How that might have unfolded.
Hey, Robin.
But I got a question about before we leave Cawthorn. Now he's a member of the House of Representatives.
That is true.
All right. Now, where was his alleged? I guess it was speechifying or some sort of action that could be seen as supporting the people who invaded the Capitol building. Where did it take place? What did he?
Well, it took place
at the January 6th rally at the Ellipse.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say, the only place where Congress critters have
immunity.
Any free license to say stuff is on the floor outside of the, if they get out from under the auspices of the Capitol itself, get off the floor, they're just like any other person in their speech and behavior. Am I mistaken on that?
No. I mean, you have a legislator has immunity for the statements made on the floor. But yeah, otherwise you could never prosecute a Congress critter for, you know, a speeding ticket.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
And so he participated on January 6th, but he was also allegedly out there in front of it, too. January 5th, January 4th, January 3rd.
Yeah, and that's going to come out, I would think, once these proceedings. And what is the due date on this now with the January 6th panel? They ought to be, you know.
Public testimony in the spring. That's all we hear.
Oh, God. Well, spring doesn't end until June 19th or 20th, whenever summer starts.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy.
Hey, Robin, do you remember that movie that was on HBO? Kevin Spacey was in it and Dennis Leary, Recount.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that really pissed me off about that movie is the fact that back then, if you've seen in that movie, there was Republicans in that movie that were getting violent with people during that whole recount process down there in Florida.
That's called the Brooks Brothers riot. And a lot of the same people who were involved with that were involved with January 6th and also involved with not only the Bush administration, but of course with Nitwit Nero's.
Yep. And I wonder if some of those people that were involved with that were also involved with Charlottesville.
It's simply, again, an explanation. All of this have simply been practice runs for what they have planned for down the road. And just like our racism in this country is a result of not crucifying the assholes of the South at the end of the Civil War – and all be nice, kiss, and make up kind of bullshit, it's coming back to bite us in the ass. And if these judges don't start giving out bigger fines and harsher sentences over any of these insurrection things, whether it be Charlottesville
Kansas,
or January 6th or any of the right-wing
crap,
shooting
at a suburban Kansas City high school. Authority
gone down a very dark alley, and this country is being beat up.
Yep. You're right, Roger, and it's basically a matter of history repeating itself over and over again in this country.
Well, I liked Robin's comment earlier that history doesn't repeat itself. It just presents itself in a slightly different form.
It rhymes.
I forget exactly what you said, Robin, but Hitler will not do the same thing that Hitler did. But a Donnie Trump will use the same tactics.
Right.
Yeah, history does not repeat. It rhymes. And by the way, I had some errant audio that played just a moment ago. The NRA's roulette wheel stopped on Olathe, Kansas today. A
then. You know, these things happen, and we just kind of blow by it now. Yeah, well. A report came in from the school resource officer that shots have been fired at Olathe East High School in Kansas. Two people were wounded in stable condition. An administrator of the school and a school resource officer. The suspect is apparently a student at the high school. Because freedom. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Robin, that's just right down the road from me, about 15 minutes away.
Oh, wow. Have you heard much coverage today?
No, the only thing that I heard was that one of the school resource officers and one of the school administrators were hurt.
Jesus. Well, that's apparently still the story.
The thing about that, if I am remembering correctly, having lived there in Kansas City for almost a decade in the 80s, through most of the 80s, that's in Johnson County, which is
rich.
It's not quite as red. It's more blue than you would imagine a place in Kansas to be, at least at one time. I don't know what it is now.
It's a blue county again. It used to be red for a while, but now it's gone back to blue.
Yeah. And this was a high school?
Yeah. I'm in Mission, Kansas, which is in northeast Johnson County, and Olathe is about maybe 20 miles in the center of Johnson County.
Yeah. Is Shawnee Mission in Johnson County?
Yeah. I used to work in Shawnee Mission. We're actually in Mission, the town, city of Mission.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Shawnee Mission is about maybe 5 minutes to the west of me.
I spent a little time in Kansas City many, many years ago, and I do remember going to one area where you could literally walk across the street from Missouri into Kansas.
Yeah.
Yep, that's called State Line Road.
Yeah, I used to live at the walk down the block and cross the street halfway, and you were in Kansas. What do we know about the kid in terms of his background?
Nothing. They haven't said anything yet.
Totally.
And I'm just speculating here, and I know we shouldn't speculate, but I'm willing to bet that he's probably come from a family of right wingers.
I'd say that's probably a good guess.
His dad's probably, oh, we got to have our AR-15s.
Freedom. Right. Yeah, sure.
And you know,
apparently the two injured people have been released from the hospital.
Well, that's good.
That's good to hear.
And by the way, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy jumped in and got us down to only $50 to go to finish last night's fundraising. So we got 10 minutes, and then all we'll have to deal with is today, and we'll have a $600 goal on Monday. Be great if we could finish with yesterday, though. That'd mean three of the first 4 days of March were fully funded. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. What else? Just to wrap things up a little bit. Weird story out of Kentucky that I've been following. So there's this guy. He's a rich real estate developer. And he had a daughter, 32 years old. She was spending the night at her daddy's mansion, and his daddy's mansion is very famous. It's got a bunker in it. It's got a panic room. And some rando dude, 23 years old, named Shannon Gilday, broke in at about 4 o'clock in the morning. Tuesday before this passed, and killed her. And daddy exchanged fire with him. And I guess the thing kind of got my attention because this is the second story in almost in as many weeks of some rando white dude with a gun murdering a woman. The first one was in upstate New York. This one is a 23-year-old guy who had no connection to the house, no connection to the family. The father, had run in the Kentucky primary, the Kentucky Republican primary, and he's a lawyer too, and he had run for the in the primary against Mitch McConnell, which is kind of weird.
Where in Kentucky was this?
Basically the Lexington area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just down the road from...
And the killer in this case, 23-year-old Shannon Gilday, broke in at 4 o'clock in the morning, wearing tactical pants and a jacket, a dark-colored hooded sweatshirt, gloves, and a light-colored face mask. And on surveillance video, was seen walking around the property. Kentucky State Police Sergeant Robert Purdy, interviewed by People magazine, said, "We can see him walking around the exterior of the residence. Exactly what he was looking for, unfortunately, until we were able to locate him and ask him, it would be purely speculation on why or what he was looking for." Rural Madison County is where the mansion is. It's valued at some $6.5 million.
Ooh.
And maybe the investigators think maybe that the Morgans were targeted because the bunker is well known. And this is the cop, State Police Sergeant Robert Purdy, said the bunker was no secret at the home.
It doesn't sound very random.
Well, and I don't know if your mind, Scott, is going where mine is. But this sounds like the kind of thing, and pure speculation, this sounds like the kind of thing that some cue ball would do. Oh, there's a bunker. They're probably wearing baby faces in there. Drinking blood and shit. And it took them a while. But they did finally catch up to Shannon Gilday. They've charged him with murder, burglary, and assault in connection with the invasion. By the way, Wesley Morgan, the daddy, had been a former member of the Commonwealth of Kentucky House of Representatives. The whole thing is just sickening. His daughter, Morgan's daughter, 32 years old, was a lawyer too. And it just doesn't make any sense, but the fact that there are two just random, you know, didn't even know anybody killings of women by young white men. And of course it's a young white man, I'm pretty sure, who did the shooting in Kansas, just points up the danger that this country faces. And just sort of bringing things back around, I cannot forget, I will not forget, I refuse to forget, that there was a shit ton of Russian money funneled into the coffers of the NRA. And the NRA, in turn, funneled that money into the coffers of Republican candidates. If a person was a little bit more paranoid, they might be inclined to think that maybe Russia was trying to foment civil unrest in this country. I don't think a person would necessarily be wrong in that assumption, do you?
No, I don't. I thought about alluding to it earlier. While all this mess is going on with Putin invading Ukraine, the Trump sympathizers and the people of that ilk and the cue ballers and all the rest of them, they're not sitting idle while all this is going on. I don't mean to sound like an alarmist, but if we learn anything from January 6th and learn anything from the mercifully brief reign of Trump, that ended not too long ago, we know that these people are capable of a lot worse than what we've seen. I mean, January 6th, like I guess it was Roger that was saying, that's a it's a prelude. How do you say that?
Prelude.
It's a warm up act, you know, before the big show, and you know that they've been itching for some decades now to get the big show underway.
Oh, and one more thing.
Before... And speaking of big show, there's Steve from Georgistan.
Oh, hot diggity! Hey, Steve.
Blubbin.
How are you?
I'm okay, man.
Well, as things wrap up here, one last thing. Labor man, our buddy Gary out in New Mexico, just sent this along breaking via CNBC. Elevated levels of rad radiation detected from that nuke plant those fucking Ruskies attacked. Shit. Now, if they cause one of these things to go core on the floor, is that enough reason to stop this madness? Anybody want to chime in on that?
To make light of a serious situation, but when you're in your meat counter at your grocery store, you can be looking for those Chernobyl chickens, the ones with three legs and four wings and big sale going on.
How do you get a madman to stop what he's doing?
By stopping the madman.
Yeah.
In the words of a friend from another program, he said last night, I kind of agree with him. He said he wants to go to Chernobyl and around that area and collect some of that radioactive dog shit from around there and bring it back and throw it in Mitch McConnell's face and say, this is still worth more than you.
Ooh. Griddle. And also, I opened the program, or alluded to during the program, the Russian assault on media. Well, a British TV crew reporting on the invasion of Ukraine for Sky News, Stuart Ramsey and photographer Richie Mockler were both wounded in an attack by Russian troops as the Russians deliberately targeted by what is being referred to as a saboteur Russian reconnaissance squad. They shot up the vehicle the journalists were in. They were reporting on the military convoy that was a convoy that was destroyed the previous day. The first round cracked the windscreen. Camera operator Richie Mockler huddled into the front passenger footwell. Then we were under full attack, Stuart Ramsey said. Bullets cascaded through the hole of the car, tracers, bullet flashes, windscreen glass, plastic seats. The steering wheel and dashboard had disintegrated.
Isn't Sky News Rupert Murdoch's outfit there?
I think maybe.
Yeah.
We didn't know it at the time, but we were later told by the Ukrainians that we were being ambushed by a saboteur Russian reconnaissance squad. It was professional. The rounds kept smashing into the car. They didn't miss. And let me see here. Might be able to get the audio. And, you know, that wasn't a rhetorical question that I asked earlier. If they fuck up a nuclear reactor and cause it to go bad, does that finally justify stepping in and stopping them? Let's see. I think I've got the audio now of.
Hey, Robin.
Stand by.
But the government has warned for days of Russian saboteurs who've infiltrated the country to bring terror. Death squads who are attacking civilians in their cars as they flee. They do exist, as we found out.
Oh, f***! It's tight, isn't it?
Oh, that's a bullet.
That was a bullet. No, it wasn't a bullet.
It wasn't. Something blew up under it.
Something went bang. Oh, there's a big
Okay. Oh, that's
a bullet. Whoa! Whoa! What? Stop! Everyone!
We think it's a Ukrainian checkpoint and a mistake, so we identify ourselves.
British journalists! Journalists!
Journalists!
Journalista!
Can anyone... You watch me? Is everyone okay? You okay, Dom?
Somehow we have to get out of this, but the rounds keep coming. It's a professional ambush. The bullets just don't miss.
Whoa! Where can we go? Should I crawl? Can we crawl down the embankment? Andre! No! Stop! Journalist!
I'm hit, but escape the car, and with producer Dominic Van Heerden, we make our way down the embankment.
Where are...
Jesus. I trust y'all heard that.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think yelling stop at the Russians does much to stop them. So I didn't really get an answer. Is radiating parts of Europe by attacking a nuclear reactor? Is that enough to end this, or will Putin just say, "Oh, it was the Ukrainians deliberately trashing their own reactor as false flag to attack Mother Russia"?
If I can try to answer it, there have been any number of things so far that are perfect justifications for taking action, but what can of worms will the taking of the action bring?
Well,
that's the only thing that would...
Step back from even that. What action? Ground troops, tanks,
overwhelming air power.
You know, they've pointed this out before. This has been an ongoing thing for Russia for a long time, and as NATO. And you guys know this just as much as I do. The president has to stay pretty much neutral, because if he says something, we're going to get bombs thrown at us. So, and plus, the other thing I want to bring up is why, as United States, why do we have to police other countries when there is NATO? That should fall on everybody, not just one.
I don't think that's
I'm talking about NATO.
Yeah, I think Robin is saying is this could this constitute an attack invoking Article 5?
Right. When the radiation is not very good at obeying borders.
Yeah, it doesn't just shoot. Look at there. It just, how does it do that? How does it know to do that? It just stays in Ukraine.
I mean, we've kind of got some experience with this, with like blasting dust from mountaintop removal sites. They can't keep it on their sites. That's why people get poisoned off-site, miles away.
But you know what, Robin, in all honesty? Just wait. Look, remember the other night? He flew close to Sweden. We looked on a map. We figured out how he had to do that to not go over any NATO airspace. He's going to do that. That was provoking. He wanted to see what would happen, how far we'd go. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. By the way, Sky News is no longer owned, or Murdoch no longer owns it. Used to. But they divested.
Well, I'm going to wrap up. I'm going to wrap up via a note from Jude. Subject line: at night in Kyiv, the bunker becomes a hospital's maternity ward. A story from the Washington Post. Jude writes: birthing in itself demands a disciplined and keen focus to move through the stages as the contractions intensify. The reality of Ukrainian women in bunkers birthing renders me acutely present and deeply connected with each. Tomorrow, the boots will be at our capital in Olympia, Washington. Possibly a large group of no-maskers, COVID deniers, along with a truck convoy are anticipated. There is something unexplainable about standing in the midst of complicated and concerning groups. A sense of freeing, yet the energies that are set into motion consumes the entire human vessel. We shall hold the mothers birthing in war zones and remain consciously connected. It's what we do. Standing quietly behind those boots and flowers when called to do so, and yes, in solidarity, from a distance, from a huge distance. My best to all. And to you, Jude, it takes tremendous courage to do what you do, and we will carry you in our thoughts. Thanks to everybody for jumping in on the conversation. I suppose the back porch will continue after the program. So we wrap up.
Always does.
Yep. I didn't know if you were going to want to restart with you at the helm, Sparky. That's or just
I am at the helm.
Oh, you were able to take over?
I'm a moderator.
Okay, so it doesn't matter who starts it. Okay, got it.
No.
Okay. Well, good. So we wrap the program up, $350 away from fully funding the first 4 days of March. Thanks, everybody, for keeping this all going. Thank you so much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. You do so much. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, I hope, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first round of Malloy is always at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now, proudly a union shop. Please stay safe. Vaccines, boosters, KN95 masks. It ain't over yet. I know the inclination is to think and certainly to wish that it is, but it isn't. Keep maintaining your social distance because God only knows how many unvaccinated there are still out there. And depending on where you are, you could be in close proximity to one, closer than you might think. And of course, if someone comes toward you, oh, I don't know, with a gun, or a Russian flag, avoid them like the plague, because they are. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. I'm going to run and check the post office box tomorrow. I don't know if you hear the drip, drip, dripping that goes on during the program, but I've got to replace the valve on the water heater. It's some expensive dripping. I'm probably going to try to do that tomorrow or Sunday.
But anyway, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. You stay safe, Jude. Later.